Welcome to Mandates and Megaphones, hosted by Jeremy Maggs. Unpacking the politics, promises, and power plays behind the G20 summit.
A warm welcome to Mandates and Megaphones in association with Standard Bank, the podcast where diplomacy and business meets real politic and promises meet potholes. I'm Jeremy Maggs. As the G20 summit draws ever closer and for the first time on African soil, South Africa is not only hosting the world, it's also speaking for business. Through the important B20 process, business leaders are making bold policy recommendations on trade, on digital transformation, infrastructure, and inclusion. But behind the declarations lies a far more complex terrain, one of trust, global credibility, and local delivery. Business obviously expects much, but it's also being expected to deliver a whole lot more. And scrutiny is mounting, including uncomfortable questions about who sits at the table and whether those voices are credible. Cas Kuvadia is South Africa's B20 Sherpa. He's the man tasked with translating business ambition into global influence. It's an important job. And today he joins us to answer some of those tough questions. Can business shape policy without being co-opted? Can Africa lead without being sidelined? And can South Africa rise and meet this important moment? So much to discuss. Cas Kuvadia, a very warm welcome. And let me start with this and a very simple question. What does the B20 actually aim to achieve beyond declarations? What's the purpose here?
Hi, Jeremy, and thank you for having me on your podcast. So, look, the B20 have been going for quite some time. And one of the issues we discussed in the handover from Brazil to us was that we need to ensure that the B20 is more than just a talk show. We're getting together C-suite people as well as representatives of business organizations from the G20 countries, and we've included people from the continent to discuss critical issues for business and to make recommendations to the G20. I think for the B20 to be more than just a talk shop, what we have undertaken to do this year is to ensure that the recommendations that we in the process of now fine-tuning are implementable and actionable. So, and we are talking to our colleagues in the US to whom we hand over, and we will talk to our colleagues in the UK who I believe will be hosting in 2027. To see if we can't actually track progress on these recommendations, whether they've been implemented, what the impact is, and so on, so that we can report back to B20 businesses on impact and on that all the work we do is actually meaningful and is beginning to create a change in the regulatory and legislative environment in G20 countries and beginning to actually bring to the fore and allow emerging countries and emerging continents like Africa to be at the table.
And that is
what we're trying to do.
And that is singularly, I would imagine, your biggest task is turning those recommendations into real G20 action. What is your real mechanism of influence here?
Well, this is where the challenge comes in. So neither the B20 nor the G20 have permanent secretaries. And so what we are trying to do here, one is we are aiming to hand over recommendations to President Ramaphosa early in September. We then want to use the rest of September and all of October to have a significant period of lobbying and advocacy for the recommendation, both with our government. We put together a South African local business advisory council made up of CEOs in South Africa who we will activate to actually lobby our government together with myself and the secretariat. And then we have an international business advisory caucus that's made up of previous B20 chairs as well as global CEOs, like people from WEF, people from the IOE, people from Bloomberg and others. to lobby and advocate in G20 countries, and we will use mechanisms and platforms available to do that, and the Secretariat will be involved in that as well. So we want to spend quite a lot of time lobbying for this. Obviously, there's no guarantee what gets into the G20 communique, but if we can, together with Brazil, ourselves, America, and the UK, so the previous one, the current one, the next one, and the following one, we can put together, even if it's to begin with, some sort of a virtual mechanism between us that we work together to track what's happening to the recommendation the next year in the States and the following year in the UK. Perhaps we get to a stage where we develop some sort of a secretariat for the B20. And we make this a more meaningful thing that actually tracks implementation. We can look at impact, and we can work more closely, because public-private partnerships and progressive and effective public-private partnerships is a critical theme coming out in all the recommendations, so that we can work more effectively with the G20 governments to actually achieve this.
Kaskavadia, it sounds to me like a lot of moving parts, and it's going to be very difficult, surely, to corral that into a single, consensual, cohesive strategy. Easier said than done, I imagine.
No, it is easier said than done. And you know, when I was asked by BUSA to do this, and I pulled together a secretariat, we recognized that this is the first time we're doing it. It's the first time that South Africa is hosting the B20 and the continent is hosting the B20. And we won't do this again for another 20 years. So the handover from Brazil was brilliant. I think they did a phenomenal job, Group OCA and I in Brazil. And we've been learning as we go. And I think that what we've done is we, at the very least, got agreement amongst the critical players in South Africa, the chairs and deputy chairs who are responsible for the task forces, together with co-chairs, 10 to 12 co-chairs in each task force from the G20 countries. And we've agreed in all of the task forces that we need to become more actionable and implemented. The critical players from businesses in the G20 countries are agreed on this. We've agreed with the American Chamber of Commerce in Washington, and I've got a call out to the Confederation of British Industries. And if between us and America and the UK, we can agree that we do need to show impact, we do need to track these recommendations, we do need to interact with our governments if those recommendations are not being implemented, then I think over the next 2 or 3 years, we can build something that can actually become more permanent and interact with the G20 governments to enable this to happen. But as I said, this is the first time the B20 is trying this, and we're going to give it our best shot. And certainly, the American Chamber of Commerce is on board, and we'll see what CBI has to say.
There's also a sentiment challenge, I would suggest to you, though. I understand the call for global cooperation, but realistically, the global mood is moving in the opposite direction. There is a lot more isolationism that we're starting to see, protection of self-national interest.
Yeah, so absolutely. I mean, when I was in Washington for the spring meeting of the IMF and World Bank, and met IMF and World Bank, the American Chamber, Brookings Institute, the UN, MasterCard, and others. It was a depressing place to be quite honest, because of what's happening in the States at the moment. But what I also saw, speaking to business organizations, speaking to people from Europe, from Asia and elsewhere, is that this is an opportunity. And when I was at the FFD4, the Financing for Development Conference in Seville a couple of weeks ago, the key message that came out was that this is an opportunity for a reset. I think there's a view that the current system is not working. Nobody's saying get rid of the current system. But the current economic system is not working as it should be. It's not creating the sort of inclusive economies and inclusive prosperity that we need if we are to continue doing business. And that it's time for a reset. So, look, the elephant in the room is the position that the current U.S. administration is taking. U.S. account for about 15-odd% of global trade. The 85% that significantly represented by the other G20 countries wants to work together, wants to collaborate, wants to use multilateral institutions, but the multilateral institutions themselves need to be reset to cater for a more multipolar world with different blocks of interest and economies and so on. And everybody told me this makes our B20 here pivotal because we have the opportunity in the midst of the fragmentation, in the midst of the protectionism and so on, we have the opportunity to immediately start looking at how we deal with that, what we put into place to continue with the multilateral global system, collaboration, so on, because without those, we can't address the issues that the globe needs to address. And American business has been very supportive of the B20. They are participating in the task forces. Some of them are co-chairs. And we hope that through talking to the administration, our government is talking to the U.S. administration as well, that we do actually reach a stage where we come to the party together and say we do need to collaborate. Now, that's what we're going to try and push. At the end of the day, those who want to participate, participate, and those who don't want to, don't. But I think that that's a significant part of the global economy is represented by the G20 countries. And businesses in the G20 countries have taken the view that we need to collaborate, we need to grow inclusive economies, we need to have inclusive prosperity. And we need to do that in a cooperating world. And we're going to give that our best shot.
On MoneyWeb, you're listening to Mandates and Megaphones. And my guest in this episode is Cas Kuvadia, the B20 Sherpa for South Africa. Cas, let's continue the conversation. And there are naysayers who say, how can South Africa credibly lead global business discussions when our own economy is so fragile?
So look, I mean, we have our own problems. Let's not run away from that. But I think that it's to a certain extent coincidental that the B20 and G20 has come to us this year, that we are hosting it at South Africa at a particular time in what's happening in the global community. I think that we need to be honest about the problems we have. But certainly from a B20 point of view, I think that this is an opportunity for us to also bring global thinking, experience, research, and work to bear, of which we can leverage to also address some of our issues and our own problems. So, you know, the recommendations we will present to our president, the phenomenal amount of work behind that, phenomenal amount of research, experience. We have knowledge partners. We have network partners like the World Bank, like the Basel Institute, like the OECD, World Economic Forum, and a whole range of others that are all working with the task forces under the guidance of the Secretariat to actually arrive at those recommendations. Then there'll be policy papers coming out of each task force. What we've been sort of encouraging South African business to do, and in our discussions with Busa, BLSD, and others, is that let's not create a situation where we hand over to the U.S. and that's the end of the B20. Let's look at how we use all the work that's been done, all the research that's been done, the recommendations that come out, and can we utilize all of that to bring back into our country and help us address some of the problems we have. And that would be the sort of value of the B20 and G20 to our country. I think that despite our problems, I think we need to also use this opportunity to promote the opportunities we do have if we address the problems and to promote the opportunities on the continent. So I don't think that lack of credibility in the eyes of some in South Africa should actually the lack of an incentive for us to do the best we can in hosting both the B20 and the G20. And certainly from a B20 point of view, we are committed to having the best B20 that's ever been had. And let's not lose this opportunity. Let's show that we'll benefit from the B20 and we will address some of the issues that actually bring about a credibility problem for South Africa.
I understand that B20 work is still in progress, but you've spent a lot of time reflecting on the importance of the recommendations that you are ultimately going to make. Are you able to give me a sense of what those recommendations might look like and whether they are ranked in any particular kind of order?
Sure. So our task forces have entered a critical phase. We are defining the policy recommendations. All the task forces, and there are 8 of them, have produce final drafts of the policy documents. And we're now going to tighten those up. We're going to see if we can actually limit recommendations to about 2 or 3 per task force. We're going to go through obviously normal editing, but we're also going to go through how do we position some of these things given the current geopolitical environment, because the American Chamber of Commerce in Washington also has to lobby and advocate their government for these recommendations this year. So we're going to go through all of that to tighten up things. But from the ongoing task force deliberations and the emerging recommendations, there are themes that are evolving. So the one is to drive coordinated action to unlock capital for infrastructure development and supply chain improvements. The second is to accelerate food security by strengthening local supply chains and regional trade integration. Third is to continue to build sustainable and climate-responsive economic systems. The fourth is to unlock Africa's critical minerals value chain. And the fifth is to empower Africa's digital and skills transformation. So these are the 5 strategic focus areas. And we also looking at this obviously within the current context. So we need to encourage a shift from reactive responses to long-term resilience through investment, trade adaptability, and green and digital transitions. And the recommendations that will come out around these themes will say, okay, this is what we need to do. This is where things are currently. So as an example, the percentage of the global population that owns cell phones, or the percentage of the population in emerging nations that owns cell phones. If we do the following, by 2030, that percentage should be the following. And then track that as we go along and see if we're making the impact. So those are the sort of 5 strategic themes that are coming out. We want to have the implementable recommendations and track them. And then we recognize that we're doing this in a difficult world, but to try and encourage a shift from reactive responses to long-term resilience across the globe.
And that is absolutely critical, that there is an element of measurement there. Otherwise, these recommendations or policy papers are simply idealistic and not actionable at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And we don't want, correctly, businesses that are supporting us. And I must commend South African businesses who have supported us through this process this year, and that's been absolutely fantastic. And we don't want businesses across the G20 countries to see the B20 as a talk show. It needs to remain relevant. It needs to actually increase its relevance. And the most effective way you can do that is to show impact. That's what business wants to see, impact, and work with the G20 governments to convince them, encouraging them to consider the recommendations. And if some of the recommendations aren't considered this year, to through this mechanism we're trying to establish, to continue to interact with the G20 governments and see how we can make progress on it.
Kaskavadia, the B20 has not been without some early controversy. There's been some backlash over some companies implicated in state capture participating in the process. How do you respond to that?
Well, look, Jeremy, I mean, I saw the article on Sunday. Far as I'm concerned, it's unfortunate that the Black Business Council decided to deal with that in public. We've been talking to the Black Business Council. But again, this is the first time we're doing this. Some of these companies have been involved in the B20 process for years, and we felt we needed to use their experience and the work they've been doing previously. We didn't just decide to use these companies. We were fully cognizant of the fact that there are controversies related to these. We sat down, we looked at and had serious discussions with them about what they are doing and have done to address some of the issues that they got involved in the past. And we satisfied ourselves that they have gone a long way towards addressing those issues. We satisfied ourselves that we would be able to manage their involvement in those two areas of activity that add value to the work we're doing and that bring the experience that they have for numerous B20s in the past, from numerous B20s in the past, to bear on this B20. And they have undertaken all of them, not just the two mentioned, but all of the management consultants have undertaken to do the sort of behind the scenes. They're not there to promote themselves. And so look, we thought it was necessary for us to work with this to actually make this a successful B20. Given the past experiences, given the continuity, Brazil was absolutely clear that without the assistance and knowledge of management consulting agency, they would not have been able to do it as the previous ones, India and Indonesia. So we went through a proper risk assessment and we made the call. Now, I think that they've done excellent work. We can go into a whole discussion about their current standing in South Africa. I think that's discussion for another time, but it's just our focus as the B20 Secretariat is to ensure that we have a B20 that this country can be proud of and that actually makes a difference in the legislative and regulatory environment that we need to work in all of the B20 countries.
Let me pivot and talk a little bit about the continent, if we can, and where Africa sits in the geopolitical food chain. And I need you to be honest about this, because there is concern that bigger African issues might not be acknowledged and acted upon. That's a risk and that is a worry, surely.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So that's why, you know, we've been having long debates about how we position these things and the work we do, because ultimately, we are representing the G20 countries, not South Africa, not Africa, but the G20 countries. But I think there is common cause in all the task forces that Africa is a continent that has significant opportunities if G20 countries act in particular ways. And if Africa and different countries in Africa, let's not talk about Africa as a single entity, it's a complex continent with many countries, that we have to do a lot of work to ensure that we increase the investment sentiment on the continent. So despite the fact that we agree that we speak for the G20 country, all the task forces have put Africa very high up on the agenda. And that's because getting Africa right is not just to the advantage of the continent, it's to the advantage of the world. Africa can go a long way towards addressing food security problems for the world. It has critical minerals that are needed for even the AI economy, and we need to ensure that those minerals are properly exploited and utilized. It has either the youth dividend or the youth problem. We believe it can be turned into a dividend in an environment where countries to the north are aging population-wise and the work-ready population is decreasing. Africa could provide young people to actually fill that gap. So there are significant opportunities and potential on the continent. Countries on the continent need to do a whole lot of stuff. Corruption, governance, regulation, all of that. There are a whole lot of stuff that perhaps through the AU we can actually collaborate on and look at common standards and regulation and so on. But there are stuff that countries need to do, and we're emphasizing that. But at the same time, we also have a situation, and we're going to say this, where in many ways Africa is treated in a way that is uncomfortable. So the risk premium that is put on some countries on Africa. So when we were in Seville for FFD4, we had a panel, and some Shabalala and on the panel said that there's a higher premium on some countries in Africa than there is on Bosnia. Now, that just intuitively doesn't make sense. One of the rating agencies has now expanded their presence on the continent, and they're saying that they need to understand the continent a bit better in the rating they give countries, which to a certain extent say they haven't understood the continent, and yet they've rated them and put the risk rating on certain countries. We need to look at how multilateral organizations look at the continent. So I think that what we're coming out with is to say there's significant opportunities here. Countries in Africa have a whole lot of stuff to do, which we identify, but critical stakeholders in global economy and investment and growth, like the multilateral institutions, like the rating agencies and so on, need to do a whole lot of work to actually create a level playing field between countries in Africa and other parts of the world in the way they look at that. So we're going to make recommendations on types of financing, on blended financing, on risk rating issues, and on the resetting of multilateral institutions to understand economies and environments other than those in the north. So, you know, I think that we will come out with recommendations that demonstrate what both Africa and other parts of the world need to do, and that if we get that right, we can unlock in a significant way the opportunities that are on the path.
And once those recommendations are made, Kaskuvadia, we look forward to welcoming you back. Let me say this, that the business of diplomacy is often quieter than politics, but as you've just been hearing, no less consequential. So as South Africa leads the B20 and hosts the G20, the world really is watching, not just what we say, but what we do. That's it for this episode of Mandates and Megaphones. I'm Jeremy Maggs. Join me next time as we continue to track the promises, the pressures, and the power plays shaping South Africa's moment on the global stage. The podcast is brought to you by Standard Bank.
Thank you for listening to Mandates and Megaphones. You can find more episodes on moneyweb.co.za.